of deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's the 18th of March, year of our Lord, 2026. You know what year it is. Things are moving pretty fast. That's what year it is. And we're going to take a look at what is happening now with the war, with many wars, and the resignation of Joe Kent, the number two to Tulsi Gabbard, and the reactions to it, the pressure on Tulsi now to show some principle, and, of course, the strategy of an ad hominem attack against a guy who's got a lot of body armor against that. We're going to take a look at the back and forth of that as we have Trump flailing in dire straits, the dire straits of Hormuz, and the implications for what happens to the global economy if he foolishly decides to put us into a quagmire. He's got some quotes about Vietnam, and you know, he's fine with it being Vietnam. He's not going to be able to skip out of this Vietnam with bone spurs. We'll be right back. But first, let's talk a little bit about what is going on in the other news, because there are other things happening than the war, fortunately. If the war comes to America or spreads even more, it will be even more dominant in the news. But right now we've got the TSA saying airports may have to close, some of them, right? Why is that? Oh, because they don't have their TSA officers. See, they're doing the same thing they did with the air traffic controllers when they don't have, when they got a budget disagreement. And you look at this and it's like, how could there be a budget disagreement when these people don't have a budget? They don't care what they spend, right? That's how we get into $40 trillion worth of debt, and that's not even counting the unfunded liabilities for Social Security and so many of these social programs that are there. Well over $100 trillion. But that's how we get the massive debt of $40 trillion. And they seem to care for some things that they make a political issue out of, and this is pure politics that is happening right now. But more importantly, it illustrates why we don't want to have government running things. When we look at the air traffic controllers, we got to the point where, all right, well, you know, we can't pay you, but we want you to come to work anyway. These people say, I've got monthly bills. I'm living from paycheck to paycheck. I can't do this. And so some of them were having to take two jobs. After a while, it's like, I just can't do two jobs. I'm going to have to do the one that pays me. Same thing is happening now with some of the TSA people. But beyond that, you know, air traffic control is necessary. TSA is not necessary. It is security theater. It is a PSYOP. It is compliance training. It is a pure BF scanner beyond freedom and dignity conditioning. It's psychological conditioning. There's absolutely no reason for it to be there from a security standpoint. And, of course, we've seen this in the past. Last time I saw this, well, you may have to close your airports if you don't have a TSA. That came up, and I think it was 2011. And it was the same time that internal documents within the TSA said there is currently no threat to airports or airplanes. And we saw that later in a lawsuit. Unredacted lawsuit got documents got published accidentally for a short period of time. Then they put up the redacted lawsuits. And they said in 2011, there is no threat against airports or airplanes, one decade after the false flag. And yet, at that time, there was still a dispute over the body scanners and the pat-downs and things like that. And so you had the Texas legislature saying, we're going to stop that. You're not going to be allowed to do that. And they said, if you don't allow us to do that, we're going to pull out. And if you don't have TSA, nobody flies into or out of Texas. All of Texas becomes a no-fly zone. And so they caved on all of that, right? And yet, it doesn't provide us any security. What it is the training from the security state. And so you have the, as a matter of fact, even before that, the previous Thanksgiving, there had been organized an opt-out campaign for Thanksgiving Day, the busiest travel day of the year. The TSA's reaction to a protest of people opting out, everybody saying, all right, you know, or at least a large number of people saying, all right, scan me. I'm not going to go through the body scanner. Pat me down, rather, I should say. Slow it down that way. Their reaction to that was to just say, well, that's it. We're going to shut down all the scanning and the body pat downs and anything. Everybody just go through. We'll just suspend the theater for a day on the busiest travel day of the year. We're going to stop pretending that this is necessary. And when you look at what is happening with these lines that are 3 or 4 hours long now, because they don't have enough TSA agents, and so they're going out of the airport, wrapping around the parking lot, coming back in, and all this kind of stuff for 3 or 4 hours. As many security experts have pointed out, queuing people up in a bunch right there at the TSA checkpoint is one of the dumbest things from a terrorist security standpoint that you could ever have. And so none of this makes any sense, but it always goes back to the fact that when the government wants to run everything, demands to run everything, they can't run anything. It's a massive bureaucracy. It's the folly of government involvement in air travel. And it's the government involvement in air travel that has, and I've said this before, if you go back and you look at, it was an engineer that I worked for who took a vacation. He went to the Aerospace Museum in Washington, D.C., and he said, it kind of struck me as I'm looking at this, that the history of air travel is really the history of engine development, right? Aircraft engine development. That's been the thing that's really driven it. Well, that was in the 20th century. In the 21st century, what is driving air travel and airplane development is the national security paranoia state. That is there as a self-serving thing to make us all fear and worship government, and to give them carte blanche to do whatever they wish. You know, this stuff that Trump does in terms of declaring an emergency, and now I can suspend the Constitution, none of the laws apply to me, because this is an emergency now. That is essentially, folks, the basis of what the federal government has been doing since World War II. That's the basis of the national security state. We have an emergency. We're all going to die. If we don't suspend the Constitution and you let us do whatever we wish, whether that's putting our hands on you, doing naked body scanners, whatever it is, right? That's the basis of all this stuff. I talked to one officer this week. She's a single mother. She has a special needs child. She can't afford to pay for a special needs child. I believe it's frankly unconscionable that we have Senate Democrats that they're holding our folks' financial livelihood hostage over political games, political partisanship. So we really need to get back to the normal order, where we all agree that we're going to hold people hostage to these political games like TSA. You know, Democrats and Republicans can at least agree on that. Got to have the TSA. Got to have these political games. And tell everybody that it's for their security and their safety. And we can't live without the federal safety that is there. So, again, TSA is holding people hostage. A security theater for the purpose of compliance training. Let me put my hands on you, and you'll be rewarded right away with the ability to fly. This is B.F. Skinner's positive operant conditioning, right? He says that's much more effective than the negative reinforcement. In other words, you're training a dog rather than beating them when they do the wrong thing, reward them when they do the right thing. So you let me put my hands on you, and you can travel. Positive operant conditioning. It works so much better. And this is Skinner conditioning. Trump says Newsom's dyslexia should prevent him from being president. He made an amazing statement that probably applies as much to him, if not more so. He says he's got learning disabilities. Says, honestly, I'm all for people with learning disabilities. Of course he is, right? But not for my president. I think a president should not have learning disabilities, okay? Well, how about learning disabilities plus personality disorders? What if you are a narcissistic psychopath and you also can't learn any lessons? Does that qualify you for presidency? He says, Gavin Newsom admitted that he has learning disabilities, dyslexia. Well, again, I think we can all see Trump's deficiencies as well, but pride and hubris and the character flaws that he won't allow, that won't allow him to admit his shortcomings, because he has to project this idea that he is some kind of a false god who is infallible in some way. And we have seen this over and over again. This is, by the way, you know, what Paul White tells us. You know, when
saying no to President Trump would be saying no to God.
Yeah.
And therefore, and I won't do that.
And any tongue that rises against him will be condemned according to the word of God.
It is God that raises up a king. It is God that sets one down. And so when you fight against the plan of God, you're fighting against the hand of God.
Mm-hmm. And Paula White knows exactly what the plan of God is, according to her. Yeah, don't bother about reading the Bible. No, she knows what the plan of God is. It's to make her rich. That's right. Well, the Trump administration is back at the gun control booth again. What a surprise. This is the thing I never could understand. I mean, even people like Alex Jones, he was always a big Second Amendment guy. Big Second Amendment guy. And yet he could swallow his pride, and he could swallow his truth, and he could still support Trump after all the gun control measures that he did. And this is even before he locked the country down with a fake pandemic and poisoned as, to poison as many people as he could with his bioweapon. Well, the Trump administration is now opposing a Wyoming bill that would nullify any gun control from the federal government. And, of course, that's another reason to oppose it for Trump, because Trump, everything Trump has done has been about consolidating power into Washington. He is the most unconservative president you could have. He wants all power consolidated into Washington, more specifically, all power consolidated into the office of president. How's that going to work out when you got somebody like Gavin Newsom, or when you get a Democrat? And folks, most likely with the failures of the Trump administration that are happening now, the hubris, the train wreck that it has become, it's more likely that we're going to have that Democrat president sooner rather than later. And so he doesn't want states nullifying the federal government. He doesn't like the 10th Amendment. That's the thing that he hates the most out of the Constitution. So there's a Senate bill in Wyoming that would have amended Wyoming's existing Second Amendment Protection Act, that largely clarifying the bill to make it more enforceable. According to Gun Owners of America, it would have created a, quote, clear path to take state and local agencies or departments to civil court for damages, a huge deterrent to local cooperation with federal gun control because of the potential impact on budgets. So the Wyoming Senate president noted that the originally passed Second Amendment Protection Act had a few gaps in it, and this, the purpose of this was to fill those gaps and to help with enforcement. The problem is, the Republican governor, Mark Gordon, doesn't like it, and Trump doesn't like it. And maybe Mark Gordon doesn't like it because Trump doesn't like it. And so, you know, it's just going back to COVID. We hear all this stuff, everybody saying, oh, it's those bad Democrat governors. It's not Trump. We had a lot of really, really bad Republican governors, people like Mike DeWine. In Ohio, people like Brad Little in Idaho. Here's a bad Republican governor who likes the federal government having uncontrolled power. He likes unconstitutional agencies, and he doesn't like the 10th Amendment or the Second Amendment. He said this would have a stifling impact on state and local partnerships with federal law enforcement agencies. And so he vetoed a similar bill last year, and he vetoed this one as well. You see, the purpose of the Constitution, according to people like Mark Gordon, governor of Wyoming, and according to people like Donald Trump, the purpose of the Constitution is to give all power to Washington. No, it's not. They despise individual liberties. They despise any power that remains with the people or with the states. They want all power in Washington. Gun Owners of America describes the veto as a, quote, disappointing surrender to federal interests, arguing that Gordon has, quote, chosen to prioritize the demands of federal agencies over the clear will of the legislature and the protection of the Second Amendment. And I'm very concerned about what's going to happen in Tennessee as well, because we got a candidate for governor, Senator Marsha Blackburn, who is by far and away the leading candidate. She's a shoo-in, not even going to be a contest. I mean, there's no contest. Nobody in Tennessee is going to vote for a Democrat. And all the Republicans have coalesced around her. All the people who would have run for office have coalesced around her because they know she's got so much support and so much money. She's one of the senators who co-sponsored this Genesis Act. They call it the Genesis 6 Act because it's like creating monsters. It's the act that it says, hands off of AI. Now, we have these new gods that we're building, and you're not going to have any state or local ability to shut this down. We'll see about that. But I can bet you that Marsha Blackburn, as governor, is not going to do anything to push back against that, because she co-sponsored this bill to nullify the 10th Amendment. But we're not supposed to nullify what the federal government does in terms of gun control. Is that right? And so the New American points out this isn't the first time the Trump administration has undermined the Second Amendment. In November of last year, November 20th, 2025, federal court filing, the U.S. Department of Justice defended the National Firearms Act of 1934. How do you defend that? Taking expansive positions on both gun control and federal power, Trump himself has previously made comments contrary to the text of the Second Amendment, you know, when he says, well, we got all these things that need to be done. Fortunately, I can do them. And they very cleverly picked a starting position, the bump stock, to do that because most people didn't care about the bump stock. NRA said, we're not going to fight that. And a lot of people said, that's just silly. But the precedent was important. Gun owners of America understood that. And Lala Harris understood that. I said, as soon as he did it, I said, watch what the Democrats are going to do with this. And within a day or two, Lala Harris, as she was running for president in 2020, said, when I become president, I'm going to give Congress a list of gun control items that they need to do and 100 days to do it. If they don't do it within 100 days, I will do it with executive order, just like President Trump did. That's about as anti-Second Amendment as you can get. And when Trump sets these precedents, the Democrats are going to run with them, because they're more than happy to do that. And so Trump really is just a New York City Democrat. Gun control, he thinks that we need to be able to tax our way to prosperity. That's what his tariffs are. Federal law enforcement, not being an enumerated power under Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, is inherently unconstitutional, and it threatens the independence of state and local law enforcement. States have a sovereign duty, says the New American, and I absolutely agree with him, a sovereign duty to nullify all unconstitutional federal acts. And they put that in here because that is the key thing that this bad Republican governor, Gordon, in Wyoming cited. He said, well, you know, we don't have laws here. Well, actually, that was ICE that said it. The acting ICE director said, we don't have laws about gun trafficking and stuff like that at the state level. Those are federal crimes. We need to run those. We need to have the federal government involved here, and we need to have the cooperation of local law enforcement to do that. Well, the ICE letter says the ICE letter was inadvertently acknowledges that state nullification is effective. Yeah, if you didn't help us, we wouldn't be able to enforce these unconstitutional laws and these things that we have unconstitutionally taken control of. By refusing to assist the federal government in enforcing unconstitutional laws, states can make a significant impact in protecting their citizens, in the same way that jury nullification is one of the most important things that we could do as individuals. And yet, look at how hard they push against that. Instead of acting as a junior partner of the federal government, the states need to reassert their sovereignty, writes the New American, including nullifying unconstitutional federal acts and rejecting federal funding. The failure to nullify, folks, has killed over 60 million babies over the period of time of Roe v. Wade. That was a case that came out of Texas, and the Supreme Court overturned the Texas law, which they had no authority to do, and then presumed to determine when life begins, when the baby is a human being, the way they put it, when the fetus is viable. But that's what they're talking about. When does the baby become a human being? They had neither the legal nor the moral ability to do that. And yet, Texas and all the other governors and states just fell in line and said, oh, okay, well, the Supreme Court hath spoken. Well, God Almighty hath spoken. And you don't care what God says, you could at least pay attention to that instead of the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court is not supreme over God. And when we look in Virginia, for example, they have just the opposite problem of the legislature in Wyoming. The Democrats, they've got a new governor there. The Democrats are in charge. And we're going to see a lot of this kind of stuff, folks, because of Trump. Trump is the Jimmy Carter of the GOP. He is going to cause such a people just revolting against not only his personality, but against what he's done. This war, this pedophile garbage, and the massive economic harm that is coming our way based on his tariffs and his war. And so you're going to see a lot of Democrats, and this is what the Democrats are going to be doing as soon as they get power, just like you see in Virginia. It's unbelievable, though apparently true, that the U.S. murder rate for 2025 may be the lowest it's been since perhaps 1900, writes the New American. And yet Virginia's newly elected Abigail Spanberger, who ran for governor, as a commentator put it, as a sane, middle-of-the-road Democrat, is this essentially oxymoronic now, writes Selwyn Duke here at the New American. She's poised to sign into law a ban on so-called assault weapons. They still don't have a definition for assault weapons, but they know that one looks like an AR-15. And AR does not stand for assault rifle. Stands for the company that put it together. The Virginia Senate has officially sent an assault weapons bill to Spanberger's desk. The bill bans new purchases of assault weapons, quote-unquote, and any magazines over 15 rounds. Its author is State Senator Saddam Saleem, born in Bangladesh. Yeah, these ideas, you don't need to have a foreigner to put these ideas that are foreign to the American concept, foreign to the American Constitution. You don't have to have a foreigner to do that, but it certainly does help, doesn't it? And so a foreigner imported into Virginia just got guns banned in Virginia. As one person writes on Twitter, Virginia Senate Democrats just passed an assault weapons ban style while admitting that they can't explain the mechanical difference between the firearms that they're banning. The Constitution is not optional. Well, it is for these people, and it is for many at the state level. And so, you know, they can't define what an assault weapon is, but they can define what a ghost gun is, I think. And so they want to shut down all 3D printers as well. And that has far-reaching consequences for a lot of other things. And I think those other things are just as important for them to shut down as the gun. They don't want you building spare parts for things. They don't want you making anything. They want to control everything. And that's a big part of taking control of the 3D printers. As Lance has said, he thinks that you know, the ability to be able to 3D print your own drones or whatever be a greater threat to them than some kind of a rifle in the near future. That kind of asymmetric warfare. Nevertheless, they're doing it anyway. And one person pointed out, more Virginians were killed by illegal aliens than by assault weapons in 2025 to 2026 year to date. So there you go. One person says, don't get rid of the assault weapons, get rid of the illegal aliens, and get rid of the people who come here with their foreign values. Why are Democrats fixated on removing Americans' rights rather than removing illegals? Why are they focused on not on handguns, which is where the vast majority of murders happen, but on firearms that are used in perhaps 1% of all murders? Targeting sporting rifles is terrible policy, but it is terrific left-wing politics, as they pointed out. And so in Minnesota, they agreed to not only ban sales, but also to require current owners to agree to home inspections. So that's what happens when you have registration of guns, right? Now, you register your guns with the state, and they're going to come to your home to inspect your guns. Yeah. Well, the most obvious question that liberal media is refusing to ask about the Iran war, this is from Free Thought Project. They said the war launched by Trump is very unpopular. There's only about, according to their poll, Reuters, only 27% of Americans approve of the Israeli-U.S. war. 43% disapprove, so it's 43-27. 29% are not sure yet. Well, wait till they go to the gas pump, then they'll figure it out. And that's what they're saying here. Mainstream media, aside from the pro-war chorus, aside from the right-wing people who support war for any reason, anywhere, most people look at this and see a quagmire in the making. And they look at the other pragmatic aspects of this, the gas pump price, what's going to happen with inflation, all the shortages and the disruption of supply chains for everything. And many people are opposed to it. But what they're saying is that's all of those things are good and valid reasons. However, it's not the principal reason. Free Thought Project says if it continues unchecked, it'll likely prove worse than the war in Iraq in 2003 or the long war in Afghanistan. I think it'll be worse if it keeps going much longer. It'll be worse than the OPEC oil embargo in 1973. Afghanistan lasted for 20 years and ended with a decisive American defeat in August of 2021, following the withdrawal of U.S. forces and the collapse of the Afghan government. Both Iran and Iraq wars have cost U.S. taxpayers an estimated $8 trillion. Including long-term veteran care and interest on borrowing, according to the Brown University Costs of War Project. So, you know, you could say maybe a quarter of our massive debt, roughly, a little bit less than that, but about a quarter of our debt. Iran is already promising to be even more costly. Initiated by Netanyahu and his war-crazed government, if it doesn't end quickly, and it's looking more and more likely that it's not. Though they speak of the war's failure, of the lack of strategy, of the lack of preparation, of the absence of an end goal, and the confusion surrounding its objectives, very few in the mainstream media have taken what should have been obvious moral positions, that the war itself is criminal, unjustifiable, and illegal under international law. Well, it is... Those are mostly legal issues. They do talk about it being unjustifiable, so that is a ethical and moral issue that they acknowledge there. But you need to understand those are different things. And I think that even the legal argument, so we have the pragmatic argument. Is this going to work? You know, and you got people like Pete Hegseth. I don't care what I've got to do as long as it works. Right? And what that's what winning looks like to him. But it's not about that. And so you look at it and you say, well, what are going to be the economic costs of this? And are we destroying the rule of law in our own country, things that are going to come back and haunt us in the future with other presidents doing this type of thing? Those are all important discussions to have, the pragmatic side of it, the legal side of it. But when it comes to the moral side of it and the ethics of it, that is the most important aspect of it. That's why it bothered me so much when all this... really, I think where this all began, before we first saw it in the Trump administration, was when he started attacking these ships off the coast of Venezuela. And you look at that and think, there's absolutely no way that's justified under U.S. law. Even under the unconstitutional war on drugs, there's no way that that is justified. There's no way that even if we stopped those ships and looked at them, we would arrest those people under the war on drugs, but we wouldn't line them up and execute them. So how do you justify? I see a ship out here. It looks like a fast boat like drug runners use. So I'm just going to kill the people on it. Obviously not coming to the U.S. And even worse than we found out, doing one strike and then circling back and killing the survivors, shipwrecked. And we have international law as well as Pentagon rules that push back against that. But there is no accountability. These people are criminal, illegal pirates in the Trump regime. And they have absolutely, these people think they're not accountable to God or anybody else. Well, they may not be accountable to anybody else, but they will be accountable to God. And that's the key thing. And that was what we used to take from Christian civilization. That was one of the key things that were brought in from the Christian faith into Western civilization. The idea that we have uniforms and flags, so we keep the limit the combat to the combatants and not to everybody in the area. We try to spare civilian life. The idea that we do not start wars. We do not have, therefore, preemptive attacks under any circumstances. Wars are fought only to end an attack that was made against you and your country. It's only fought in defense. But now these guys have ignored all of that. They point out the aggression, particularly while negotiations were underway, is ethically indefensible. Yeah, that was the other aspect of it. We see assassinations. We see treachery. We see perfidy, which is actually what the crime is really known as. This war and the Trump regime checks every one of the boxes, folks. Were they talking about piracy or war criminals or anything? They check every single one of those boxes. And so it's a lot of people are complaining about high energy prices, complaining about Trump's political immaturity, criticism of his failure to assess the situation altogether. Equally absent is Netanyahu's role in the war, as well as the stranglehold that Israel exerts over successive administrations, both Republican and Democrat, including the supposedly American first president. Commentators have repeatedly agreed in one form or another that the U.S. must avoid being consumed by Middle East conflicts and instead concentrate on what they describe as the central geopolitical challenge of our time, and that is the rise of China. Well, the people who want to go to war with China have to really be hating this because China is the big winner in all this. They've already sided with Iran. They've been giving help to Iran, and Iran has been giving help to China, saying, if you're a Chinese ship, you can go right through the strait. We're not going to bother you. But if you're an American ship, we're going to try to sink you, and they do a pretty good job of that. Opposition must rest on moral and legal grounds. And I think that's absolutely true. Primarily, moral grounds, ethical grounds, Christian values. This, folks, this war is the price we pay as a post-Christian society. When we abandon the morality and the ethics that Christ gave us, and we decide that we're going to side with assassination and treachery and sneak attacks and starting wars, we take that, we have lost the moral high ground, and there will be consequences for that that are natural. And there will be consequences from God as well. The mainstream liberal media should not be confused with genuine anti-war voices. Their objection to war is rarely principled, the mainstream media. They tend to oppose military intervention only when those wars fail to serve U.S. strategic interests, to threaten corporate profits, or to risk undermining Israel's security. This is not opposition to war. This is the logic of war itself. Yeah, if we focus back on pragmatic opposition, then understand that what we're really doing is strengthening the argument for war for pragmatic purposes. If our only objection to it is that, hey, it's costing too much money or it's harming our security or whatever. No. If killing kids works, then let's do more of it. That's where that ultimately leads. Well, young voters are turning on Trump, and he'd had a big victory with young voters in the last election. Democrats had their weakest show of support among voters under 30 in 20 years, which led Trump to get a 13% point gain over those groups. Well, you know, starting wars is never justified, even if you win. And so one person says, I feel betrayed, said a 26-year-old in North Carolina. I just don't understand why we're fighting in Iran if we've never been attacked. I just don't understand why. And so, again, everybody instinctively understands that whoever initiates the attack is the bad guy. Hey, Hans, are we the bad guys here? Is the one Nazi to the other? Meanwhile, you got Alex Jones is screaming, partial coup. It's made the Drudge Report. Rallying MAGA against Trump over the Iran war disaster. Alex is always the first rat to jump the Trump ship. And then always the first one to come back on, too. Because he knows which way the wind is blowing, and he knows where he's going to make his money. He says, we have to just call it what it is. This is a partial coup. A partial coup by whom? He won't criticize Israel over this. Will he get back on track, or will he fail? Again, let's straddle the fence. Let's take a look at the pragmatic aspects of it, says Alex Jones. Look, a coup is not what it is. This guy has shown for the longest time, Trump, that he is a traitor and a murderer. And Alex has run cover for him. So now we have, now he's running cover for him as he sold himself out and sold us out to a foreign government, Israel. And, you know, when people look at Pam Bondi, who is covering for Trump's pedophile stuff, covering up his stuff, I looked at that and I thought, what she's doing is not really that much different than what Alex Jones did, right? Pam Bondi, oh, forget about it. The Dow is at 50,000 points. What do you want? Right? That's the way it was with Alex. It's like, hey, we made $50,000 yesterday selling storable food and other emergency stuff. Go with the pandemic, right? He didn't say that per se, but that was the, that was clearly understood. You know, it's just like when you look at this Newsmax thing where they put up this Zionist pyramid there. I had somebody who, you would know his name if I mentioned it, but I'm not going to mention it. Called me after I was fired. He said, you need to go work for Newsmax. You know, the people who put up this Zionist pyramid, telling us that Jesus Christ and Western civilization and everything is based on Judaism. Like, wow, I can't believe what propaganda this is. But I said, no, I don't want to work for any organization. Because when you work for an organization, they don't have to go around and tell you, you know what, we're going to push the AIPAC agenda. We're going to push Zionism or whatever. It's just clearly understood. You know, everybody, it's kind of unspoken, but you know what the party line is at a particular news organization. I don't do news like that. I'm going to tell you what I think. I could be wrong, but I'm going to tell you what I think. I'm not going to tell you something that I don't believe. But Alex Jones will push this, hey, you know, he made $50,000 selling storable stuff and fear-mongering for the pandemic, so let's do this. Let's do more of this. He'll do that just like Pam Bondi will sell the stock market at $50,000. So just shut up about the pedophile stuff. Just shut up about the pandemic. Shut up about the vaccine bioweapon. Don't talk about that. Shut up about the January the 6th stuff. Don't talk about that grift because I'm really making a lot of money off of that. That's what we have seen over and over again. And so MAGA is now even fighting over the accusation that Trump staged his fight, fight, fight nonsense, you know, the earshot. And I said from the very beginning, I believe that it's fake. I am absolutely convinced that it is fake, 100% convinced. This is another 9/11. I don't know how they pulled it off, but, you know, if you look at Trump, this guy hung around all the professional wrestlers all the time. And these guys will, I remember my cousin who used to like to go to professional wrestling live in Tampa. They had Dusty Rhodes and some of these other people, and he would go there. He really enjoyed it. And he's like, oh, it's real. I mean, they were really bleeding. It's like, you do realize, right, these guys are, they're kind of like Jackie Chan. You know, they can do some pretty amazing physical stunts, right? And they will palm a razor blade and actually cut themselves to make it look like they're bleeding. I wouldn't put it past Trump to learn that trick either. And so, infighting has erupted. And I looked at this and I thought, so who's the big MAGA influencer that is pushing back against this, they said. And the person who's pushing back against it right now is none other than Milo Yiannopoulos. I finally agree with Milo on something. How about that? What do you think about that, Travis? Milo is pushing back on this. He says, I hate myself for thinking it, but dude, that crap wasn't real. There was no assassination attempt. It didn't happen. I'm sorry. It just didn't. I agree with him. I agree with him. He says, at least we learn about the scam-filled, the more we learn about the scam-filled life of Donald Trump, why isn't there a serious investigation into the staged assassination attempt in Butler, Pennsylvania? That was the moment when Trump stole the 2024 election. Get after it, an investigative journalist. America deserves the truth. Well, again, America is not going to investigate 9/11. They're not going to investigate the COVID fake pandemic and the mRNA stuff. And Trump came right back at it at the very beginning of his administration, right back to mRNA. But now we add artificial intelligence to boot. So we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. But before we do, Stealth Patriot, thank you very much for the tip. He says, 1903, the Wright brothers took their maiden flight. 2001, commercial passengers air flight began with the creation of the TSA. That's right. Yeah, it is not. That is our contribution to all this stuff. Our society is going down. And we have a very interesting commentary from a guy whose name I'd not seen before. He's a medical doctor who was working in an ICU during all this COVID pandemic nonsense. And he's basically saying the same thing I was saying. He said, I had 4,000 interviews, and I realized early on that all of a sudden, everything just changed. He said, when I do these interviews and I would talk about stuff, he said, they made it very clear by insinuation that that was not welcome. And I could be kicked out. A lot of doctors were. He said, always in the past, doctors would disagree about things. And he said, that's how you do science. That's how you do medicine, is what he said. You know, I saw that coming because I had heard all the, well, we have a scientific consensus and the science is settled. I'd heard that about climate nonsense, the climate MacGuffin, forever. And I'd said forever, I said, that's not the way you do science. Science only advances when somebody challenges the consensus, when somebody challenges the status quo. That's the only way it advances. And so don't ever talk to me about science being settled. If you're talking about science being settled, then you're talking about politics. You're talking about dogma. You're talking about a religion. You're not talking about science. Science is a show me. Can you reproduce this? Can I see it? Well, otherwise I'm not interested in it. And that's what he was saying about medicine. He said it was always... He said, we'd have big discussions and disagreements about what should be done about different things, especially in an emergency situation. But he said, now, you know, if you question something or he said, hey, that doesn't look like it's working, the system perceived you as a threat. And if you stop and think about it, that's why I say, you know, live not by lies. I refer to that so many times because that is the essence of a Stalinist type of society. A communist China type of society where you toe the party line or they purge you. And they're able to do that because they control the financial strings. That was what Solzhenitsyn was saying about that. He said, I understand when you'll try to navigate amongst this stuff and you'll try to publicly say, well, I agree with this, but don't ever agree with it in your mind, even if you have to do that, because if you don't do it, they'll kick you out of your home. You'll lose their job. You'll be on the streets. You'll have no food, whatever. That's the way it works in a Stalinist society. And we saw that Trump, with his massive amounts of money, was able to do it very quickly. Why was he able to do it very quickly? He didn't corrupt each and every one of these doctors directly. They didn't necessarily get that money. But the corporations were running the hospitals for the most part. So you had corporate institutions that are easily bribed, especially with massive amounts of money that were being thrown around by the Trump administration. And so they're easily bribed. They focus only on money. And that's how you control them. And so if you look back at COVID, to me, the thing that was most striking about it was that they were able to just flip a switch and change America into Stalinist Russia, the same type of society that Solzhenitsyn had talked against. They were able to just do that instantly. Trump did it. Trump did it with bribes and financial blackmail through the corporations. That kind of fascism. And it was amazing to see how that happened. Spromford, thank you very much for the tip. And he just says, God bless the Knight family. Thank you so much. Angelo, 1999, he says, get your ammo now. Prices are going up. I got an email saying expect shortages and climbing prices. Yeah, of course. We're going to have shortages and climbing prices on everything, folks. Anything that is important to you, try to get it as soon as you can, because that's what's going to be happening with everything. That's the Trump legacy. Same thing he did to us 6 years ago, and we still haven't recuperated from it. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
The David Knight Show.
APS Radio delivers multiple channels of music right to your mobile device. Get the APS Radio app today and listen wherever you go.
All right, welcome back, folks. And we're going to talk about Joe Kent here, but I've got a tip from Audi MRR. Thank you very much, Audi. Appreciate that. And a reminder that Jason Barker has agreed to join him on his podcast. The podcast name is Everything is a Lie, Damn It. No spaces between the words. This Sunday. He said, also, our buddy Angry Tiger is having some dental work today, so keep him in your thoughts. Yeah, sorry to hear that. It's something we all hate, is dental work. I told Travis, I saw this note, I said, ask Audi where his podcast is. And so,
and you can find it on Rumble. Just search Everything is a Lie, Damn It.
Okay, good. Good. All right. Let's talk about Joe Kent. This is a guy that is the number two to Tulsi Gabbard. He has a very, very impressive resume, and you got some people in the Trump administration who decide that they're going to attack his credibility. Well, good luck with that. He resigned. He said, after much reflection, I've decided to resign as director of the National Counterterrorism Center. I cannot, in good conscience, support the ongoing war in Iran. Iran posed no imminent threat to our nation, and it is clear that we started this war due to pressure from Israel and its powerful American lobby. Well, there you go. He has criticized the war and criticized Israel, and the knives have come out for him. As a matter of fact, when we look at it, this is what the letter looks like, if you want to take a look at it. You could zoom in on that a little bit. He says, I support the values and the foreign policies. This is letters to Trump, by the way. It's an open letter to Trump. I support the values and the foreign policies that you campaigned on in 2016, 2020, and 2024, and what you enacted in your first term. Until June of 2025, you understood that the wars in the Middle East were the trap that robbed America of the precious lives of our patriots and depleted the wealth and prosperity of our nation. And of course, one of these wars robbed him of the life of his wife. She was killed as she was abroad working on one of these wars. She was killed in Syria. And I looked at that, and my first thought was, but what about the assassination of Soleimani? That is hardly hardly minding your own business. That is hardly justifiable from an ethical or moral standpoint, I believe. And I don't know if that's good geopolitics, but again, he takes the pragmatic approach, which, by the way, folks, is the path to war and to hell. And he said specifically then addresses it right away. That was my question. I thought, well, yeah, but what about the assassination of Soleimani? He says, you understood better than any modern president how to decisively apply military power without getting us drawn into never-ending wars. You demonstrated this by killing Soleimani. And I thought, okay, this guy did have a path to power through the CIA. They do assassinations all the time. I just have to say, you know, when you do these assassinations and you do these regime changes and nobody mentions what happened in Iran, that's where our history with Iran began, with a coup, and began with a despotic regime that we put in power there. So the guy is not perfect. He has had a long resume where he's paid the price with his family. He's been rewarded. He's done a lot of tours of duty. He's not some chicken hawk like Trump. And he has been awarded many medals for what he did. But he still doesn't look at this from the ethical standpoint, I think. Assassinating people, I think that is just one of the most underhanded things. It's like right up there with sneak attacks and telling people, we're going to let's negotiate over this. Maybe we can come to an agreement while you are planning to sneak attack them. I think it's disgusting. As a veteran who deployed to combat 11 times and a Gold Star husband who has lost my beloved wife, Shannon, in a war that was manufactured by Israel, I cannot support sending the next generation off to fight and die in a war that serves no benefit to the American people, nor justifies the cost of American lives. And again, we make all these decisions as if God did not exist and as if we do not have to one day stand before him, which is ultimate foolishness. Well, when you look at what the ethics, quote-unquote ethics, of our country have become, this is a retired general talking about some things that he has seen Trump and Hegseth say. You know, the whole idea of no quarter, whole idea, well, I think I'll just go attack Karg Island for fun, right?
Every single military member who is killed or wounded in action, is their lives actually impact dozens of their families. So thank you for taking that time. Secondly, I want to be very clear. The words that the Secretary of Defense said are absolutely the words of potential war criminals. That those are the kind of words in terms of no rules of engagement, the idea that no quarter be given. Putting it bluntly, the president cannot protect this Secretary of Defense, even if he does give him a pardon for any crimes. The International War Tribunal will potentially consider this Secretary of Defense for war crimes against humanity. It also disturbs me greatly when the president himself says, we're going to hit them again just for fun. It sounds like a bunch of frat boys talking about something. Death and destruction and the harmful impact on human beings is not something fun.
That's right. And I think Joe Kent understood that, even if he doesn't understand assassination is not the path to victory. It's not the path to legitimate regime change. And just like bombing civilian populations, it does galvanize the people against your country, and rightfully so. How would we feel if somebody legitimately attempted to assassinate Trump? Which hasn't happened, I don't think. But when you look at this, I think it is the worst kind of perspective that is there. But that is the perspective of War Crime Pete.
It was never meant to be a fair fight, and it is not a fair fight. We are punching them while they're down, which is exactly how it should be.
People like that, folks, are cowards, fundamentally. And I just got to say, when I look at Pete Hegseth, Don't call him a Christian nationalist. Call him a nationalist if you have to. Don't call him a Christian nationalist. There is nothing Christian about these actions.
I stand before you today with one unmistakable message about Operation Epic Fury. America is winning, decisively, devastatingly, and without mercy.
So there's nothing Christian about that. The Christian values gave us the just war theory. You don't revel in how many people you can kill, especially in civilians.
The results have been incredible. Historic, really. Only the United States of America could lead this. Only us. But when you add the Israeli Defense Forces, a devastatingly capable force, the combination is sheer destruction for our radical Islamist Iranian adversaries.
Islamist adversaries. This is the Ninth Crusade.
The difference with this crusade is that they're not trying to liberate Jerusalem from the Muslims. What they're trying to do is liberate the entire Middle East for Israel.
And we have only just begun to hunt, dismantle, demoralize, destroy, and defeat their capabilities just 4 days in. Starting last night and to be completed in a few days, in under a week, the two most powerful air forces in the world will have complete control of Iranian skies, uncontested airspace.
Hegseth has vowed to unleash, quote, overwhelming and punishing violence on enemies and promised to dispense with stupid rules of engagement, quote unquote, is what he calls it.
No one's putting us in danger. We're putting the other guys in danger. That's our job. So we're not concerned about that. We mitigate it as we need to. Our commanders factor all of this. But the only ones that need to be worried right now are Iranians that think they're going to live. We will fly all day, all night, day and night, finding, fixing, and finishing the missiles and defense industrial base of the Iranian military, finding and fixing their leaders and their military leaders, flying over Tehran, flying over Iran, flying over their capital, flying over the IRGC, Iranian leaders looking up and seeing only U.S. and Israeli air power every minute of every day until we decide it's over. And Iran will be able to do nothing about it. Death and destruction from the sky all day long.
You know, there's a lot of ways that you can deny Christ, isn't there? That's one right there. So, talk about your crusade. Instead of somebody like Joe Kent, who has seen the horror of war losing his wife, instead of him, we get War Pete. He needs a good punch in the face. High school football coach wannabe. That's really what this guy is. Joe Kent, a top U.S. counterterrorism official, resigned over the Iran war, the highest-ranking Trump administration official to quit in opposition to the conflict. He's also known for his support of conspiracy theories, says the New York Times. Oh, conspiracy theory? Here's an idea. You know, the FBI, which coined the term conspiracy theorist to get people to shut up about the assassination of JFK, that is one of the charges that they put out there for the most part in terms of crimes. You get charged with the crime and conspiracy to commit the crime. One of the most common charges is conspiracy. What about war? Is war a conspiracy crime? Especially when it is done like the Trump administration does it. They have criminally conspired with Netanyahu to create these war crimes. And of course, his boss, Tulsi Gabbard, stays. She wants the job. Mr. Kent, says the New York Times, is not an ordinary war critic. He has long had a penchant for conspiracy theories, suggesting that FBI agents could have been responsible for orchestrating the January the 6th attack on the Capitol. See, that's the, when you look at the New York Times, that's their conspiracy theory, right? And then they got into, and he dismissed allegations that Russia manipulated the 2016 election. The New York Times has got its conspiracy theories. The left wing mainstream media has its own conspiracy theories, and they treat them as if they are the gospel truth. But they're just theories about a conspiracy, and they're not proven. The New York Times' favorite conspiracy theory. And so We just need to understand that criticizing Israel is not anti-Semitism. It is not a conspiracy theory if they were the ones who actually put together this war. And yet, we see this increasingly. You will not criticize Israel. And as I was talking about yesterday, they have taken over our politicians, no doubt about it. And Don Bacon is a Republican who's not coming back, but he said good riddance to Joe Kent. Why? Because he criticized Israel. And I looked up Don Bacon. Turns out he's gotten $1.6 million from AIPAC. He's owned as well. So the criticism of a foreign government is allowed without being called a racist. And if you tell me that I can't criticize a foreign government, folks, I'm going to criticize them even more. As a matter of fact, what has happened is they've bought these politicians, and now they're buying church pastors by the thousands. Here's a free ticket to Israel, a junket, and we will show you around this place that you've always wanted to visit, and we'll tell you just how special it is and how special we are. And you can go back and you can talk to people about politics that will benefit Israel rather than talking to them about the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ. That's what this truly is all about. And Chuck Baldwin sees where this is headed. Yesterday, I talked a good deal about the Catholics who see the handwriting on the wall because they don't follow into this Zionism and dispensationalism. So they said they're coming for us because we hold to traditional understandings. But there's a lot of Reformed churches and confessions that also hold to that same understanding of Israel's role in history and redemptive history. But if they can shut you up, if they can buy the pulpits, if they can buy the politicians, it's a very concerning thing that we're headed towards.
This push to nationalize Christianity is in reality a vile, wicked plot of the evil one to destroy real Christianity in our country. In a short period of time, we will be experiencing full-blown religious tyranny in America, where we will be told what we can and cannot preach, what we can and cannot believe. Child of God, be very careful. Real Christianity is not a nationalized Christianity. We are all one in Christ. Remember the verses that we began with. Jesus came to all people. There's neither Jew nor Gentile. We're one in Christ. And the minute that we begin to dissect Christianity into nationalities or races or ethnicities, we become idolaters. And that's driving this movement.
That's right. And it is a divide and conquer strategy. We're going to divide people by their ethnicity. We're going to divide them by their nationality or whatever. That is not Christianity. And as a matter of fact, we can see how this is already operating in the so-called Religious Liberty Commission that Trump had as he fired Carrie Preaching Baller because she had a different opinion. You're not free to have that. A different opinion about Israel on the Religious Liberty Committee.
I've been a loyal supporter of the president for almost 20 years. This goes back to when I was 21 years old and I was Miss California at the Miss USA pageant. And I've known him. I consider him a dear friend. And I will tell you right now, I do not recognize our president. I think that we are an occupied nation. I think that a foreign country has occupied our government. And we are seeing now that this president of the United States of America is being influenced by a foreign government. And MAGA, let me tell you right now, MAGA is dead. It is deader than dead, and Americans are furious. We do not recognize President Donald J. Trump anymore.
That's right. You should have recognized him a long time ago. You were in love with something that you created. It's kind of like what Harry Belafonte said about Barack Obama at the end of his term. Harry Belafonte, who was a real liberal, and he looked at Barack Obama and he said, I don't know who this guy is. We projected what we wanted him to be onto him. And people do that all the time from both the left and the right onto these messianic figures that they have out there. But of course, in terms of an occupied country, in terms of how they got control of everyone, just take a look at what is happening to Thomas Massie. You have all these Zionist billionaires coming after him. And now it's TPUSA as well. Look at that. They said TPUSA is attacking Thomas Massie. People have put up clips of Charlie Kirk talking about how Thomas Massie was a great congressman and everything. And yet, even by their own scorecard, they have Thomas Massie lifetime 86, and in the most recent Congress, 100 in terms of what they want to see people do. And yet, and he's the only one that's that high. You go from him to Comer, who is 62, and then you have Barr at 50 and Guthrie at 50 and Rogers at 50 and so forth. So they're coming after Thomas Massie because the Zionist billionaires want them to come after him. Mr. Kent is a close friend of Tucker Carlson, says New York Times. And Tucker Carlson had a lot to say about him. He said, Joe is the bravest man I know, and he can't be dismissed as a nut. He's leaving a job that gave him access to the highest level relevant intelligence. The neocons will now try to destroy him for that. He understands all that, and he did it anyway. And Tucker Carlson has talked about him in the past. Why? Because he ran twice for Congress in Washington State. And what Tucker Carlson said about it, I thought was interesting because it is the way that they operate. And he knows that because his dad was in the CIA. He says the CIA hates him. And what happens is you're running for office in Washington State, and Nick Fuentes shows up and starts praising you. Now, whether or not you agree with Nick Fuentes or you reciprocate, the fact that Nick Fuentes is there trying to hug you, trying to kiss you in public, essentially, he said that's the kiss of death. And that's how they use controlled opposition to take people down. That's what Tucker Carlson was talking about. He was talking about Fuentes, actually, and he used the example of Joe Kent. And he said, this is how the CIA operates. They bring in somebody. He said they did it with him, with David Duke. You know, have David Duke come in and say nice things about me. He said, I disagree with David Duke. I don't want anything to do with him. I never praised David Duke, but everybody said, look, David Duke is saying nice stuff about Tucker. So Tucker must be like David Duke because he's liked by David Duke. He said, so they used Fuentes to do the same thing. And so you have the New York Times quoting Don Bacon, who again got $1.3 million from AIPAC. And then you have, they also quote Ilan Goldenberg, who is a senior official at a liberal pro-Israel advocacy group. And he says that Kent's letter was anti-Semitic. Because again, that's what they got rid of Carrie Prejean Baller for. She said, so you're saying that if I criticize a political entity, a foreign government, that makes me racist and anti-Semitic? And so that's what this guy says. Goldenberg says it's anti-Semitic. He said the idea that there's a secret conspiracy of the media and Israelis to deceive Trump into going to war with Iran is ugly stuff that plays on the worst anti-Semitic tropes. Well, the problem is, Goldenberg, it's not a secret anymore. Everybody knows that's what happened. We could see that was what was happening before Marco Rubio said that was what happened. He said, we weren't ready to do this, but they were going to attack, and so we figured we're going to be getting a counterattack, so it'd be better for us to join in the sneak attack with Israel, because that's the way Israel operates. So that's not a question as to how this all happened. Everybody knows that Israel drug us into this. And yet the New York Times wants to pretend that that didn't happen.
I must say I find it a little bit, it's kind of a syllogism when people talk about what a great ally Israel is. It is a great ally in defense of Israel, you know? I mean,
which is fine. I mean, they're entitled to put that first, you know?
No, right. That's their great concern. And look, I mean, let's face it. At the end of the day, Iran is a much greater threat to Israel than it is to the United States. So when they say that people say that Israel's a great ally in the fight against Iran, I mean, it's kind of like saying that South Vietnam was a great ally in the fight against North Vietnam. You know, I mean, it was, but weren't we there to defend South Vietnam? You know, so.
Yeah. These guys, a project for the new American century. That was the guy who was talking about that. When the neocons are saying that we are the puppets of Israel, maybe you ought to pay attention. And, of course, Bill Kristol can only kind of smile and nod along with all of that. But that's even what the neocons even understand that. Even Marco Rubio points that out. So many people in the GOP are hitting at Tulsi and saying, Tulsi too, she should quit. The Iran threat to Americans was imminent, says the White House as they are pushing, or rather Tulsi Gabbard as they're pushing back on this. So Glenn Greenwald says, I get that someone might stay in an administration in order to use their influence to steer it in a better direction. However, Tulsi has zero influence. She is a joke. Trump even said publicly that he didn't give a crap about what she thinks. Worse, she's dumping on Joe Kent for his act of conscience and courage. So it's Mike Johnson who says there's no imminent threat to our nation. Rather, he said Iran posed no imminent threat to our nation. And House Speaker Mike Johnson said, no, there was, right? Joe Kent said there was no imminent threat. So he's criticizing him and saying, I set in on this Gang of Eight thing, and I know about all that. Well, Democrats also set in on it, and they also agreed that there was no imminent threat to our nation. As a matter of fact, if you look at the letter that was put out by lying Leavitt, Caroline Leavitt, here's what she had to say. She says, well, the Post and story should be immediately retracted by ABC for providing false information to intentionally alarm the American people. And I think this is in regard to the statement that there was a plot by the Iranians to launch drone attacks into California. And so she said, to be clear, no such threat from Iran to our homeland exists, and it never did. And so she's saying there's no threat from the drones, but the reality is there's no threat at all. They don't have any way to project power here. And she pretty much admitted that as well. But it doesn't matter if Caroline Leavitt says it. It doesn't matter if the Democrats say it. If Joe Kent says it, well then, just listen to Mike Johnson. This is one thing he knows about. Usually, if anybody asks him a question about something that's happening, well, I don't know. I haven't looked into that yet. I'll have to look into that, but I haven't seen that yet. But he knows where he stands on Israel because he's been paid to stand there. And so he said, we all understood there clearly was an imminent threat. And remember, this is the guy who said, well, Iran attacked us. They hit three of our embassies. After you unleashed hell on their country, they attacked, counterattacked. He tried to make that sound like they had initiated the attack. Well, Marjorie Taylor Greene said the Republican base is fractured along generational lines. Many of the older Americans from the baby boomer generation that watch Fox News all day long very much believe the talking points on Fox News. And they have spent decades of their life convinced that fighting these wars is the right thing to do. Because you've got Fox guarding the hen house, right? Or I should say now they are guarding the White House. Marjorie Taylor Greene says, it has turned into some perverted, deranged version of MAGA now that nobody wants. And so you've got people now coming after. These are the ad hominem attacks that they're using to come after Joe Kent, who has served his country over and over again, done it honorably, told the truth, and resigned knowing that they would come after him. So Trump's former deputy chief of staff, Taylor Budowich, said that Kent is a, quote, crazed egomaniac who is often at the center of national security leaks. Well, I don't know about the leaks, but I know that she worked for a crazed egomaniac. That's about the best description of Trump you could come up with. It's not just an egomaniac, but he's a psychopathic egomaniac. So she said, he rarely, if ever, produced any actual work. Well, The problem is, I don't know if this person is begging for a job from Trump again or not to put out something nasty like this without any real evidence of any of this, but it is a stupid, transparent ad hominem attack that I think everybody can see through. And how does this reflect on Trump? Trump, in the first administration, he was there, and she's saying this about the first administration. And so why would Trump hire somebody like that again if he was competent? And why would he praise somebody like that? Because he did praise him excessively. And so one person on Twitter said, well, Joe's wife died fighting wars in the Middle East. The administration doesn't want this kind of fight against him. Well, I would say they're wrong. I think Trump wants every kind of fight, especially one where he perceives that he has been wronged in terms of loyalty. And so Mike Cernovich came back and said, well, it would be smarter to just let him ride off into the sunset rather than to escalate this, but because this is not an exchange that the administration or their surrogates will win. Yeah, that's exactly right. And unfortunately, neither is Iran, but that doesn't stop them. So Trump had previously said, Joe Kent is a retired Green Beret Gold Star husband running against a rhino incompetent congresswoman in the 3rd District of the state of Washington. Joe served his country proudly for many years, and he understands the tremendous cost of America's wars in the Middle East and elsewhere. In Congress, Joe will be a warrior for the America First agenda, unlike the person he was not endorsing, who voted, despite the facts, against the Republican Party and for the Democrat impeachment scam. So again, he won the nomination, ran twice, and lost to a Democrat. But again, as Tucker pointed out, I think it had a lot to do with the fact that the establishment doesn't want him there. The CIA knows who he is, and they get somebody like Nick Fuentes to come in and give him the kiss of death. Trump says his head of counterterrorism was weak because he opposed the Iran war. He claims that he really didn't know Joe Kent, despite having repeatedly praised him and given him a top job in his administration. So how does that reflect on Trump, right? The guy is constantly lying and or incompetent, or you could say both, I think. I would go with the and. Always thought he was weak on security, very weak on security. That's why I made him head of counterterrorism. So senior officials in the Trump administration now tell Fox News that Kent was a known leaker. But you got a leaker and you don't get rid of him. What does that say? They don't have any, they can't attack him ad hominem. So all they can do is say, well, he was a leaker or he was weak or whatever, or I didn't know him. And all these things are about as obvious a lie as what the administration was saying about Minnesota. Iran posed no imminent threat to our nation. That was the key takeaway from his letter. And even though it was the same thing that Caroline Leavitt said, they are coming after him for that. Well, Dare Real Agile, thank you very much for the tip. He said, thank you for being a beacon of light in this dark world. Well, thank you very much. Frederick from Montreal. Got somebody in Canada. I don't support Trump's war against Canada, and I thought it was interesting. I don't support Mark Carney either, but Mark Carney basically gave Trump the back of the hand when it came to all this. I need your help now in the Strait of Hormuz. And you got to love seeing that from different people. Of course, Macron has done the same thing. You don't have to be a fan of those people to oppose Trump's foolishness. And the key thing is that he, you know, they're all staying out of a quagmire because Trump is going to double down. And somebody even asked him, what about Vietnam? I'm not worried about that. Yeah. Well, maybe he can tell people he's got a bone spurs and he can get out of his job as commander-in-chief like he got out of the Vietnam War. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
And the sweet sounds of Motown. Find them on the Oldies channel at APSradio.com.
Not so far from here, there's a very lively atmosphere. Everybody's going there this year. And there's a reason, the season opened last July. Ever since the USA went dry, everybody's going there, I'm going too. I'm on my way to Cuba, that's where I'm going. Cuba, that's where I'll stay. Cuba, where wine is flowing, and where those dark-eyed Stellas light their fellas' panatellas. Cuba, where all is happy. Cuba, where all is gay. Why don't you plan a wonderful trip to Havana, hop on a ship, and I'll see you in C-U-B-A.
Yeah, I let that run a little bit long. The genius lyrics of Irving Berlin and Bing Crosby. And that's where Trump wants to go. He's going soon to Cuba. And I let it run a little bit long because that is really about Cuba as being an outlet for the people who were under alcohol prohibition. That was our first failed prohibition, right? So you could go to Cuba and you could drink openly there. And that's what the rest of the song is talking about there. And since the USA went dry, it was, I guess you could say that Cuba might, you could make a case, it's one of the first failed narco states. Because what happened was you wound up with a very, very corrupt Batista regime there. And that allowed the communists to come in, just like the very corrupt Shah of Iran, that allowed for the Muslims to come in and say, you know, we're going to clean things up. You're tired of this corruption, all the rest of this stuff. So, yeah, it gave the mafia an open field day there, and it was a very corrupt government. They wound up getting the communists, and of course, the rest of this is history, a very long history that we have with Cuba. Now, Trump is very happy because they've done an energy blockade of oil, and Cuba's power grid has collapsed after weeks of U.S. oil blockade. And I don't know exactly the details of it. It might just be that they ran out of fuel and it collapsed. And, you know, once you have to take these things down in a controlled way, that might be why the entire grid came down. Cuba's electrical grid suffered a total collapse across the entire island on Monday. The country's power operator said, marking the latest nationwide blackout in recent years. The first since the U.S. effectively shut off the flow of oil to the island of roughly 10 million people. Efforts are underway to restore power across the country, adding that no faults were detected in the electrical units operating at the time the grid collapsed. So again, if it was taken down in an uncontrolled way, that's all I can guess, but I don't know a great deal about electrical power distribution. Nationwide power outages have been reported frequently over the past few years. Cuba heavily relies on oil for electrical generation. Fuel prices have skyrocketed so much that the gas can be as much as $9 a liter on the unofficial market. Think about that. That's about a quart. So, $36 a gallon to put into your 1950s car, which didn't have that great of gas mileage, but meaning that it costs more than $300 to fill up a car's gas tank. And who knows, maybe Trump's Hormuz follies will get us that kind of gas price in the United States. It's not beyond imagining if you want to shut down all the oil production in the Middle East, we could wind up with that as well. You know, Trump deliberately sanctioned their oil. And you could look at this and say he didn't do it deliberately here. I don't know. Is it deliberate or a just idiotic plan, blowback? Officials in the U.S. government must be feeling very happy about the harm that they've caused to every Cuban family, said the Cuban deputy foreign minister of all that stuff. Well, Trump is very happy because he's anxious that he's going to be able to go back to Cuba. On nearly every street corner, conversations center on when power cuts are taking place and for how long. At a night in Havana, the street is swathed in near total darkness. Sales of fuel at government-run gas stations are now highly restricted. Only tourists, diplomats, and Cubans who have been granted a slot using an online system are allowed to fill up, and that is after waiting for hours. Shades of the 1973 OPEC embargo, excuse me. Trump said last week that Cuba is in deep trouble, and the U.S. may be part of a friendly takeover or an unfriendly takeover, he says. They're down to, as they say, fumes. He's very excited about this. This is a guy who just loves misery, conflict, war. I do believe I'll be having the honor of taking Cuba. That is a big honor, he said. Taking Cuba in some form. Yeah, taking Cuba. I mean, whether I free it, take it, I think I can do anything I want with it. Yeah, this guy is like a bad, spoiled brat. It absolutely is amazing.
I do believe I'll be the honor of having the honor of taking Cuba. That'd be good. That's a big honor.
Taking Cuba.
Taking Cuba in some form, yeah. Taking Cuba. I mean, whether I free it, take it, I think I could do anything I want with it. You want to know the truth? They're a very weakened nation. I was just with a fantastic person who's Cuban and made a fortune in sugar. You know, Van Hool family, right? And this family wants to go back to Cuba to visit it. They haven't been back in like 50 years or something. They come from...
Of course he knows them if they made a fortune.
Cuba.
Yeah, they're buying influence. They'll do it for them.
We'll see what happens. They were asking me about that. They want to go back. Not only Van Hool. A lot of Cubans have said, oh boy, would they love to go back. I think Cuba, I don't know, in its own way, if they're, you know, tourism and everything else, it's a beautiful island, great weather. They're not in a hurricane zone, which is nice for a change, you know. They won't be asking us for money for hurricanes every week. But I think Cuba's seeing the end. You know, all my life I've been hearing about the United States and Cuba. You know, when will the United States do it? I do believe I'll be the honor of having the honor of taking Cuba. That'd be good. That's a big honor.
Taking Cuba.
Taking Cuba in some form, yeah. Taking Cuba. I mean, whether I free it, take it, I think I could do anything I want with it. You want to know the truth? They're a very weakened nation right now. They were for a long time. And very violent leaders. Castro was a
what about us?
Leader. His brothers are very violent leaders. Extremely violent. That's how they governed. They governed with violence. But a lot of people would like to go back.
Okay. Yeah, they govern with violence. Well, you know, China has been doing a lot of memes to make fun of Trump and the Trump regime and their criminal pirate actions. And so they put this together to show what it looks like, our policy looks like in South America. There's the eagle pushes the button. And there's all the birds, oh, no. The doves.
Let me keep everyone safe.
Sounds great. Maybe not.
Now, there we go.
Yeah, the umbrella.
Sometimes
is
security
a cage.
Comes with a little control.
Yeah, sometimes security comes with a little control, and sometimes wars come with a little bit of a false flag. You know, when I think of Cuba, I grew up in Florida. I know a lot of people my age had parents who were Cuban refugees, but I didn't know for the longest time about Operation Northwoods. And of course, you can look it up. It was declassified, and everybody can see that it was an idea to justify an invasion of Cuba by having a false flag attack on American skyscrapers and buildings and shopping centers and blame it on Cuba, hijacking airlines to do so. As a matter of fact, taking airplanes, and this is in the early 1960s while JFK was still president. So it'd be like 1960 or 61 or something like that. And taking a plane and getting everybody off of it, putting the plane on autopilot and making it sound like the plane is being hijacked, then fly it out over the ocean and kill and take the plane down, right? Or blow it up. I forget which it was. And then to attack military bases and make it look like it was Cuba as well. This was the American government in the early 1960s. Now, they didn't do it for another 40 years or so. But again, when you look at our long history with Cuba and with Iran, and I'm not a friend of either of these countries. I don't like either one of these countries. Now, I understand what they did in Cuba because, as I said, I knew a lot of families that had come from there. And they talked about how they lost everything. So, you know, this sugar empire these people had, who are now friends of Trump, you know, it kind of reminds me, in a sense, Smedley Butler saying, I went to war throughout South America for the fruit companies. And war is just a racket. It's like a criminal racket, like a mafia operation. It's exactly right. So he says they governed with violence. Does Trump govern with violence? Just asking for a friend, you know. Well, Jerry Alitalo says, don't look at the man who enthusiastically appointed Joe Kent. Do not look at the man who is behind the curtain. That's right. This is, again, they're very practiced at all of this. This is, do not blame Trump for anything that was done with the fake pandemic, even though he funded it. No, he's not responsible. No, he is responsible. The buck stops with him, but it also started with him. He paid everybody to do it. So they've got a long history of excusing Trump and making sure that he's not responsible for anything that his subordinates do. As a matter of fact, you know, if you listen to Alex Jones, it's those bad guys, they've done a coup. You know, Trump is really good, and maybe we can get him back. We just need to explain to him what needs to be done, because it's these people that he's appointed. They've taken this over. It's been a mutiny, a coup against him, right? Never hold him responsible. And yet, at the same time that they portray him as this hapless victim, they want you to believe that he's got godlike messianic powers and he's going to make everything straight. And you need to give more power to the office of the presidency as well. Well, we have Yona Adewodi says oil prices jumped up 5% today already. It's taken a while for the always optimistic stock market. And I say it's not just always optimistic, but it is also because they have their agents who are propping up the stock market. It's just like what Gerald Celente said last time I had him on. He said, you look at how people reacted to these things, how oil jumped up everywhere else in the world and gold jumped up and then our markets open up. And while they do, they pull these two things down. And so there's a lot of market manipulation by our own government or people working in conjunction with the government. It's not just irrational exuberance, but there's both of these things are factors that are there. But you can't escape the reality for that long. So it's long overdue to see this kind of response. We'll be right back.
Decoding the mainstream propaganda. It's the David Knight Show.
Whether you're feeling like the blues or bluegrass, APS Radio has you covered. Check out a wide variety of channels on our app at APSradio.com.
Well, it was weekend at BB's. Over the weekend, we had people propping up Netanyahu, whether he's dead or alive, right? So we had this back and forth happening. A lot of people saying, well, we think that he's dead. And in response to his absence, what we got were a string of videos, and we had yet another one released yesterday. I think it's important to look at these, as Travis was saying the other day. He said, look, understand, they got a lot of ways to fool people besides AI. I realize that. But that can be very effective as well. And it's interesting, I think, that we understand some of the ways that AI works, for example. So we've got a new video that is now Mike Huckabee with Bibi Netanyahu to show that he really is alive. And so you have the huckster who is there with Bibi, and he says, well, Donald Trump wanted me to check on you to make sure that you're alive. I see that you're alive and so forth. And they make jokes about Six Fingers because that was the first one, had six fingers at one point. Of course, there was some plausible deniability about that. Maybe that is just a blur or something that is there. Maybe it's not six fingers. And yet now it appears that in this latest video, they've overcorrected. He's got four fingers. Here's an example of this.
No, the president asked me to come and make sure you were okay.
Yes, Mike. Yes, I'm alive.
I checked that, and I'm happy to see that. But he wanted to make sure because, you know, you guys get along too well.
I know, and we shake hands with five fingers in each hand. You know, but I have to tell you, I'm alive, but I have this card.
Oh.
And, yeah, don't read it. So it's a punch card.
Mm-hmm.
Today I erased two names on the punch cards. And you see how many more to go on this batch.
You know what the good news is? My name is not on the punch card.
This kill list. Now, look, there it is. Now, see that he's got four fingers, right? That one little finger, that's Huckabee's. It's there.
List of the good guys.
Thank you.
And what the president, the U.S. forces are doing is incredible. We're very proud to stand shoulder to shoulder with them and getting rid of these.
And so forth, right? And so, in a sense, that video explains to you so much why they would go to such trouble if Netanyahu is dead or in a coma. Why they would go to such trouble to pretend that he's not. And why they would make a lot of very strange videos. As a matter of fact, there was yet another video. And you can see, when I showed that to Lance, he said, be careful because, you know, they could very easily just use real actors and do a face swap and body swapped with it to a large degree. But he goes, I think the better example, he said, is the ring that disappears. And here's a video with a disappearing ring that they tried to pass off as being proof of life.
That's
so look, there's the ring. You see the ring. Now watch, when he moves his hand over, the ring disappears. The ring is gone.
Right.
Now he lifts his hand up again or holds his hand down, and you can see the ring is visible again. That is very characteristic of something in AI, a ring that disappears and then reappears again. And so they are putting out AI videos. They very much do not want to admit that Netanyahu's died. And of course, when you look at the Iranians, and Netanyahu's got his list there that he shows to Huckabee, and he says, this is my list, and we took two names off of this, and they killed two leaders in Iran. And the Iranians admit it. You know, they're not trying to hide it. The Iranians have a different strategy. They have a, as I talked about, the fourth successor. They said they have structured their government, their military, so that you can't do decapitation strikes. They've got a lot of people further down, and they have decentralized it and dispersed it with what they call the Mosaic organization. And yet, it's important to Israel to take out these leaders. Why? Because that's the way Israel is structured. It's very important that they have a highly centralized hierarchical leadership in Israel. And so they project that onto Iran. Iran doesn't work that way. But Israel does. And you can see that in what they're focused on with their video, whether it's real or fake. I think it's fake. And it wouldn't just be damaging to morale and damaging to the reputation as being invincible. I mean, they're arresting people for showing missile strikes and showing damage in Israel. They don't want you to see any damage in Israel, any missile strikes, anything like that. And they're not the only ones that are doing that. You've got some of the Arab states are doing the same thing. So we don't want anybody to see that we're being hurt in this war. We want to maintain morale and cover up anything bad that happens to us. But it's even worse than that for Netanyahu. This is not just about giving a, they got our leader too type of thing. If Netanyahu goes, yeah, they will replace him with somebody that is probably just as bad, maybe worse, who knows. But he's been able to hold this stuff together. He's got charisma that a lot of these other leaders don't. He has put together at great difficulty. He's been able to put together this conservative coalition. It took him several elections to do it. They kept having elections, and they would win a plurality, but not a majority. And, of course, that's the way it works when you have a democracy that has multiple political parties. You typically have to put the government together after the party that gets the most votes. Very rarely do you have a party that gets more than 50% of the votes. But if they get 40% of the votes, then they put together a majority of over 50% by putting together a coalition. He's been able to do that with great difficulty. And so he's been able to, you could say, very pragmatic in terms of shutting down laws that would block him from doing things, very much like Trump, actually, quite frankly, or vice versa, I should say. And so they do not want for the Iranians to have the moral victory of seeing that they've damaged them, that they've inflicted a wound on them, wounded their president. And it would be catastrophic, more than just a morale destroyer. It would be catastrophic for them to lose their head. A decapitation strike for them would be very important, unlike for Israel, unlike for Iran, rather. And then they put this out as well. This is the, let's see, let me get this here. This is a picture that was, if I can find this here, right here. Huckabee also put this picture out. And it's kind of interesting. Somebody gave that picture to, gave it to AI and said, when was this taken? And that's one of the things about AI. It can go through and it can spot some inconsistencies in some of these videos. And as I pointed out, you had several of large language models that people asked if some of these videos that were put out by Israel with Netanyahu, are they real? No, about a 90% chance that they're fake, that type of thing, because I see this and I see this. And they can also go back and you've got all these different videos that purport to show different places being struck, you know, places in Iran or places in Israel or places in other countries. And a lot of times these things are recycled videos or pictures from something in the past and relabeled and presented as something that just happened somewhere. And so that's one thing that AI is very good at, is going back and doing tremendous deep searches and finding a match. And it found a match for this picture that was put out by Huckabee pretending that he had just met with Netanyahu. But actually the picture was from February 2025. At the Prime Minister's office in Jerusalem. Image shows Netanyahu alongside Mike Huckabee, who had just been appointed as U.S. ambassador to Israel. So they recycled that, and he said he had met him yet again. And that's not the only one that they have done that to as well. They also put out some other videos showing Netanyahu, not videos, but still showing Netanyahu meeting with soldiers and you've got a couple of these. Look at the dates on this. This was 7 years ago. And then there's another one here that they showed as 14th of March. Do you think that the soldiers look the same? Look at these women. They're the same people. They just rearranged this. And, of course, you can easily alter it just a little bit with artificial intelligence, just reposition these people. But it's the same people yet again. And so they're recycling old pictures and saying that they were just taken with BB yesterday, whether it's Mike Huckabee or whether it's people in the Israeli Defense Forces that are there. And as I said the other day when we talked about this, there's all these different anomalies. For instance, the coffee cup that was incredibly full, but it never spills. Even though he holds it at an angle, it doesn't spill. It still stays there. That is a dead giveaway with artificial intelligence. You have the fact that the profile of Netanyahu that's on the video does not match an actual photograph. That's another artifact of AI-generated video. And then there is the pocket that moves to go over his hand, right? The pocket moves on its own there. So he had a lot of these different things that were there. As a matter of fact, some people had fun with let's see where I can find this here. I got so many clips of these things, I can't find anything anymore. Looking for, here it is, a Macron deepfake. So somebody basically reproduced the coffee video, but they used Emmanuel Macron in it. And it's not firing. I found the button, but it's not firing. Okay, well, you live by the clips, you die by the clips, I guess. One person summed it up like this. The BB Magic Show. Look at the number of fingers. 5, 6, what do we have? Now the coffee cup. Yeah, that's right. So, again, Netanyahu posts all these proof of life videos. They're working very hard to show one video after the other, just show the real guy. Have him show up to some of the meetings. And that's the other thing, as one person said for early on. If he is skipping out on all these meetings in a war that he has pushed for 35 years, and now he's AWOL, you only see him when he goes to the coffee shop. Well, then maybe he's would be dead politically. I don't know. But New York Times says that the proof of life videos sow doubts about what is real. And again, I would just say, why try so hard at doing this? Just show up to a meeting. They can't show the damage. They can't show the missile strikes. But it's more than that, because he is so important from a coalition standpoint. Nobody else has the kind of charisma that he has. When you look at Trump and Bibi and Ayatollah, as Lindsey Graham said, everybody hates Trump and Netanyahu even more so than they hate the Ayatollah. That's not firing either, Travis. Can you fire that for me? Let me see if I can get the other video that I've got here to fire. Well, I tell you what we'll do is if we can take a break, we'll just take a break, but that may not fire either. We'll be right back if I can fire this.
Making sense common again. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Tell Alexa to add the APS radio skill and have access to the best channels anywhere, from country to blues, classic hits to news. APS radio curates incredibly diverse playlists for you to enjoy. Get details at APSradio.com.
Well, as I was saying, Lindsey Graham was astounded that the Ayatollah was more popular than Trump or Netanyahu now. Or I should say, not as unpopular as the two of them. So I guess the way you could fix that would be for Trump to do this.
Salam alaikum, Habibis. This is Donallah J. Ayat Trump speaking, inshallah. From now on, I am your new Ayatollah. To the Iranian people, Azadi, freedom is coming. Trust me. We're going to make Iran Kabir again.
Yeah, trust me. I never tell a lie, right? I don't know what Paula White would think of that. She might, he's getting demoted from being God and Messiah to just being the Ayatollah with that. But there was a great question that was asked by Peter Doocy. I think he's the best guy in the White House press conference. Peter Doocy said this.
Your ratings are through the roof, Peter. Yeah, okay.
Thank you for noticing.
Congratulations.
Can I ask you another question?
Yeah.
If Iran, as you said, totally obliterated, got the missiles, got the first two rounds of leadership, Air Force gone, Navy gone, can we wrap this war up this week?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Will we?
I don't think so, but it'll be soon. Won't be long. And we're going to have a much safer world when it's wrapped up. It'll be wrapped up soon. We're going to have a much safer world. I had an obligation to do this. I didn't want to, I call it an excursion. I didn't want to make this journey. We had the highest stock market in history.
But hey, it's fun.
We had
right?
low gas prices. Everything was good. And I know exactly. I know what, you know, you're going to do it. And people are going to raise the price of oil. And that's good. But I know that. But that's a very small thing compared to allowing them to have. You want to see a stock market go down? Start letting them hit you.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Start letting them destroy the Middle East and all these different oil refineries. And, of course, we've had more attacks now. Trump was told that closing the Strait of Hormuz was a likely response they would have. He just dismissed that. No, we're going to take out their leaders. They'll collapse. Everything will be just fine. And yet it's not. And so what we see happening is Iran has now targeted the UAE's energy infrastructure yet again. We saw this the other day with the large liquid natural gas facility, I want to say the Ra's al Ghul, but that's the Batman villain. It was a different name. But this particular one is the world's largest ultra-sour gas development. And I didn't know what ultra-sour was. So I'm learning some things here. Turns out they've got three different grades of gas that come out, natural gas. One of them is sweet. Another one is sour. The other one is ultra-sour. And the issue about the ultra sour is it can be extremely toxic and corrosive. It's not just that it doesn't taste good or smell good, I guess, but I don't know what the deal is, but it is extremely toxic and corrosive. And so it's very, very complicated to handle this kind of natural gas. And this oil field at the UAE is the largest one in the world to handle that kind of gas. And it was hit. Another tanker was also hit near the Strait of Hormuz. And what Trump is talking about doing in terms of, well, we can just take this island. You know, it'll be fun. Yeah, it'll be fun for the Iranians to set the entire Middle East on fire. And they will do that if you come after their oil facilities. If you decide that you're going to take them down, they are going to take everybody else down. He should believe them when they say that. Separately, a drone attack sparked a fire at this zone, a critically important hub for the UAE's crude exports and their bunkering operations. It's one of the world's top hubs for storing crude and fuels, located on the eastern seaboard of the UAE, a key shipping hub for the wider region. So it has faced repeated attacks in recent weeks, underlining the vulnerability of the UAE's only export route that bypasses the Strait of Hormuz. So they are determined to take down all of these Arab states that have allied themselves with the United States to make a point, but also out of vengeance, basically the mutually assured destruction. You don't need to have nuclear weapons for that. They could basically, with conventional weapons, they could basically nuke the entire oil industry. And if they do that, even if the Americans were to go on and somehow win, whatever winning looks like, with boots on the ground, take over the country and run it with an iron fist or something like that, I guess. Is that what winning looks like? I don't know. Since we've never won any of these Mideast wars, any of these asymmetric wars, I don't know what winning looks like. I don't know what it looked like in Iraq or Afghanistan. I don't know what they're planning on doing here, but this whole thing about taking over Karg Island, it's going to be a massacre for the Marines to go in there and to try to hold those areas. You look at the coastline there. It's over 400 miles long that they would have to do around the Strait of Hormuz. And they can't just go in and take the beach. The number of troops that have to put in is just extraordinary. But, of course, Trump doesn't care about costs. And he doesn't care about cost in terms of lives either. And so, by the way, this is, we have a lot of fake videos that you'll see on social media. This is a real one. This is a tanker being hit. There it's trying to cross. This is going to be what happens to the oil fields, to the refineries. They are very vulnerable, just like the tankers. U.S. forces could capture a key Iranian island, but this would lead to a whole host of new problems. And so this is from RT. They said the dynamics of the first weeks of the conflict show the actual developments have diverged significantly from what the initiators of the escalation likely expected. In other words, it's not going according to plan. And we can see that because Trump is adamant that he needs to have help, and yet he is getting no help at all from people. Mark Carney in Canada had this to say.
The United States and Israel have acted without engaging the United Nations or consulting allies, including Canada. So where to from here? With a rapidly spreading conflict and growing threats to civilian life. Canada reaffirms that international law binds all belligerents. We condemn the strikes carried out by Iran on civilians and civilian infrastructure across the Middle East. And we implore all parties, including the United States and Israel, to respect the rules of international engagement. Canada calls for a rapid de-escalation of hostilities and is prepared to assist in achieving this goal.
And when you look at how the Pentagon is presenting this, well, you know, we can go and we can blow up everything, right? We launched thousands of bombs against them, and we can just level them like Gaza. Well, Hamas is still in Gaza. And when you look at the number of explosives that are used in terms of bombs and even napalm that was launched against North Korea, they still survived. And they never got their regime change out of that. What does this look like? How much you can't win a war by dropping bombs from the air. As a matter of fact, Scott Ritter had an interesting comment on an interview that I saw that he had. And he said when he was there in Iraq, he said the Air Force has got a vested interest in getting people to believe that they can win with shock and awe and they can win wars from the air. He says you can't win wars from the air. And he was somebody who was involved in targeting, and he knew that they were not really doing the real thing. He said we went out and told them, look, you hit this over here. This is not even really a target. And so they were doing so poorly that they just came up with a new way to look at this. They said, we're going to assume that a certain percentage of our bombs hit targets. And so we're going to, by dropping more bombs, we'll just be hitting more targets. And that was their assumption. So he said after the, while the war was still going, he went into one area to actually do an on-the-ground inspection and compare that to what they had reported that they had destroyed. He said, I went out the first day, and he said, you know, the war was still going elsewhere, but I went out the first day, and when I come back, there's a couple of guys, armed military police from the airport, Air Force, and say, you're out of here. You're leaving the country right now. And so we've seen this kind of fraud perpetrated on the American people and on the military itself, perpetrated by the military. And that's what they're about to do again. And yet, as they asked Donald Trump about Vietnam, he had this to say.
The Iranian regime has told Sky News, if you put boots on the ground in Iran, it will be another Vietnam. Are you afraid of that?
No, I'm not afraid of. I'm really not afraid of anything.
Yeah, I'm not afraid of anything. I'm not smart enough to be afraid of anything. You should be afraid of Trump and of his recklessness and what a dangerous, corrupt individual he is. Somebody that can do what he did allegedly to children, I think that those allegations are true. Somebody who can't some of the decency to apologize and say, hey, I'm sorry we got it wrong and killed all those kids in that school. Think about what this guy is capable of doing to Americans. We've already seen it 6 years ago. Thank you for joining us.
The Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God.
She doesn't have an interview.
She doesn't be able to do anything. What we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. thedavidknightshow.com.